probably I'm just a wedding photographer, so I'll go with that. But I think I do a lot more than that, especially these days. But yeah, primarily my main focus is around working at weddings.
Okay.
But I do, work as an independent journalist. I do work, political work as well at the moment. So it's a bit of everything, and it's an interesting mix. But all that kind of revolves around working with photography and videography in terms of, capturing those moments.
Right, and how long have you been doing wedding photography?
This would be my 13th year, so quite a while.
Quite a while?
Yeah.
Quite a while.
Hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of
weddings.
Have
you got a count?
I haven't got a count, no.
No?
It's a lot of weddings, yeah.
And do you remember your first wedding?
Back then, I kind of remember. I know it sounds funny, but it's a bit hazy. I don't know how the sequence of what led up to those kind of events, because when you start out in any industry, especially something like photography, a lot of the time you're working with, your friends and family, so you're doing stuff for people. So I'm sure I ended up shooting some sort of wedding or something for a friend or a family member. Like, that's kind of how the introduction happened, that stuff.
And how do you find, what drawn you to weddings in the beginning? Like, why was it?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, out of school, a lot of the focus, especially towards the end of high school, was really on academic excellence. In my community, I'm of a Sri Lankan background, and South Asians, we really focus around, doctor, lawyer,
finance,
those kind of professions,
definitely.
And a lot of the time in school, when I was at school, I was finding myself, I was involved in performing arts, I was involved in, more drama stuff, choirs, things like this. So more of the artistic stuff, photography, media studies, and that's kind of where my interest lied. But, deep down, there's a push there from your background, from your parents and stuff to do something like this. So I ended up in law school, and I was, languishing there for a few years, just kind of, it wasn't really my fit. Like, I could kind of, it was kind of what I was interested in, but it wasn't really who I was. Mm-hmm. So,
There was that old saying, parents always fighting to make you go do something, go get a paper.
It was a lot of that, and I think a lot of that, of course, comes from migrant parents coming to a country like this and pushing their kids to kind of excel. So I was in that mind frame. So being involved in kind of a artistic, creative pursuit wasn't really at the cusp of something that could be a potential career. But I think just actually finding myself doing it after I bought my first camera. Like professional camera, and then really
which was
Canon 1000D.
Oh, yeah,
so
wow.
Which is not a professional camera.
Yeah.
But I mean, back then when I was working in retail and I was working at an electronic shop, so I had access to all the different cameras.
Yeah, cool.
But that's the one that was.
So your background's a nerd as well.
As a nerd, yeah.
Yeah,
so
we
was working at, I don't know if any Australians would know this, Dick Smith Electronics. So I was there for that was my first proper job. So
yeah, cool.
I was selling cameras to people and learning about all that stuff.
Australian company.
That's right, yeah. And, using the camera and kind of just really kind of doing that stuff back then, like it was just at the start of, things like Facebook and stuff where they were picking up in those, early 2000s and taking photos of friends and family
MySpace.
It was just after MySpace died, actually.
Tom
was finished off.
Yeah.
And posting stuff and doing that kind of got me into doing things for friends and family, and then, I was really enjoying that aspect of doing that kind of hands-on creative work. And then obviously, how do you then make that into a business? And, to be honest, I'm still learning that process after a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I know a lot more now today that I wish I knew back then.
Of course.
But of course, the journey from a creative pursuit into actually making it into a business has been, very fulfilling, but of course, times very challenging as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And did you find with that 1000D, there were moments where you just wanted to throw it away and go, why am I not getting the photos that others are getting?
I mean, look, this is what happened. I had the 1000D.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to sign up to a photography course type thing as well.
Okay, so you picked it up without any, no course?
I just picked it up. I was just doing it. Yeah, and I was like, I was at law school. I was like,
Intuitively.
I was like, I'll go do this photography course at nighttime. I'll just figure it out or something, just see if I'm interested. But, I went there and then straight away I felt a bit inadequate with my 1000D. Because all the other, people who are a bit more serious than me, maybe, like they're kind of doing it out of school or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They had their, better cameras, whatever. So I was like, oh, stuff this, I'm going to take this seriously. And I invested in, back then, a 1D Mark III.
Oh, you're beautiful.
Yeah, so 1D Mark III and a few different lenses and stuff. And that was kind of the top of the range Canon kind of
at that
particular time. So it kind of went from the 1000D to the 1D Mark III. So it was like two worlds. But instantly I saw the benefits of using, I guess, very high-end professional gear. It does make a difference. So that was kind of, which led me down to the path of just like purchasing multiple cameras, multiple brands. And I haven't stopped since. So I'm kind of stuck on that trajectory now.
Cool. And so there's definitely a passion in photography and the equipment and everything else.
Yeah.
Where do you find, is there something specific that people book you for when you're, when they book you for a wedding, or
Your
style, certain style?
Look, it's not really I don't believe it's a stylistic type thing. Obviously, people like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I found a long time doing weddings, especially as a full-time pursuit, a lot of it just comes down to, your relatability with people. You meet a lot of this work is word of mouth.
Of course.
Like, despite what SEO companies might call up and tell you to, like, advertise on Google and do all this kind of stuff and you get clients, a lot of this is just about being in the moment, doing the work, obviously providing high-quality work to people.
Of course.
But that all kind of comes and ties in together. So I think weddings is one of those disciplines where it's not just about the photograph and the image itself. It's very important, of course, but on the day, how you are perceived by people, your interactions with people, and just the general comfort that they have with you afterwards as well. It's all about that, really, to be honest. And, I know that because when as you go along as a wedding photographer and you learn these things, it's not really about, you could almost charge anything you want if people really want to have you there. So it doesn't even become about the monetary aspect of it. It really is about what people are expecting from you and what you're providing as a whole package. What you bring into it. And I think people just kind of want that there for some, I kind of understand it, but it's hard to explain it.
in a way. I understand. It's you're being part of their day as well.
Yeah.
And they want to feel comfortable around you.
Of course.
And in front of the camera.
Of course, yeah. A lot of it is to do with that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, when was the first time, you tied your shoelaces?
No, I have no. No,
how old you were?
No,
do you have a style?
Huh?
Do you have a style?
A style?
Is there, because it's two styles, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's like the one, do both of them together or the one?
I just do the very basic one thing, because a lot of the time I'm walking around, my shoelaces come off to this day, so I'm not very good at the shoelace thing. I actually stopped getting shoes with shoelaces. I prefer the ones
you slip-on.
Slip-ons are easier.
Right. back to the weddings, did you ever find there was ever a moment where you came home and there was nothing on the cards, or the cards were corrupted?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's also been a very interesting aspect of doing professional work.
Yeah.
Especially if you're someone that's starting out, you learn these things as you go. So, the accessibility to technology today, in terms of being able to back stuff up, have redundancy, cameras that shoot two memory cards, it's like a massive change from when I started.
On the
1000D, right? Yeah. So you don't have those features and aspects, and the memory cards aren't that great and all this stuff. Touch wood, we've been very blessed to not have massive issues where we haven't been able to recover from in terms of, whether it's recovering data or whatever it is at the early stages. But those instances kind of showed me the importance of redundancy. What it means to be a professional wedding photographer is actually also what you do after the fact.
As
much as you do before the wedding as well. So we prepping and then the after the fact stuff that we do is very important to me today. So, a lot of the times in my office in the studio here, we have multiple NAS systems, multiple backups, things back up to the cloud. That is the kind of redundancy and stuff that we're thinking about today, because it is kind of a very important thing, right? A wedding.
Yeah, of course.
So you kind of learn that as you go. These days, again, we didn't have YouTube content creators and stuff talking about these things and showing us all these things. You kind of learn on the job.
Mm-hmm.
This is very from the time where professional wedding industry was kind of switching over from people who were more involved in working with like film photography and stuff and going really towards full-scale digital photography, you know? So we were kind of the intruders into this space back then. So yeah, like it has been no major issues, but you know, those things are have been at the forefront of my mind for a long time. Yeah.
Awesome. Now, has it taken you much, has it taken you around Australia at all? Or
yeah, look, I mean, that is one of the great things about weddings. A lot of people diss this job as some sort of, you know, like just a wedding photographer. Actually, I've been able to travel all around Australia, many places around the world. You know, I do a lot of work back home in Sri Lanka as well, obviously because of my roots and in South Asia and India. And it's amazing because it actually opens up different parts of the world to you as well. You experience things that you probably wouldn't have necessarily done, and you go to places that you probably wouldn't necessarily go to in the general course of life, because you know, weddings bring together people from all sorts of backgrounds, different classes, different professions, whatever it is, and they do all sorts of different styles of wedding in different places. So you know, the world that it kind of opens up is very interesting, and you know, a lot of things that I've learned in my life since starting this career has been on the job at weddings, and through the people and the connections and networks that I've made at weddings. So look, yeah, that's one of the benefits of you know, especially today working in a world where people can travel around really easily, and a lot of people decide to do destination weddings, or they meet people overseas and they want to get married in a different location. So yeah, there is that aspect of travel involved in weddings.
Definitely. And obviously during COVID, you couldn't shoot any weddings. And, you know, I was drawn to the attention of you through Facebook Watch and what was going on in Melbourne. Explain to me what you did and like how, obviously that was a passion, you know, that was something passionate to you and close to you. And I think, you know, I'd love to hear about, you know, what drew and what bubbled up inside of you that took you out onto the streets to record what was happening in a pretty precarious time in the world.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, look, it was a very interesting time, and yes, I'm a very kind of hands-on person that's been working for a long time with my camera and doing this type of thing. So obviously, it's a shock to the system when, you know, you've been doing this for years and years on the go, like very on edge when you're working, you know, for instance. And then all of a sudden there's nothing, right? And that in itself is actually, you know, you think, oh, this is a good thing. Like, I can relax. Like, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
Clients, everyone is chill now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No one is, like, chasing you up or calling up about this thing happening next week. There was phone calls, actually. And, you know, the very...
On the slide. The weddings on the slide.
Nah, not even
Did you imagine?
Not even like that. But there was requests. I can't comment further. but look, I mean, the first interactions I had with this was a lot of brides calling me, obviously, you know, like very emotional, because this is the first time they're going through this as well. And, you know, their wedding's supposed to be next week or the month after, whatever. They're just cancelling and... they're trying to figure out what's happening. So very emotional time for people. A lot of people not sure exactly what's happening. So there was a lot of uncertainty, you know, for many of us in many industries. And, you know, there's no particular importance about the wedding industry or anything like this. And everyone is equally affected, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that uneasiness, that kind of... there was a time where it was creeping up to be... there was a lot of not direct answers in terms of what was happening to us, right? We're being told to do certain things, which is fine. You understand governments have a responsibility actually to do that type of thing. But with that responsibility also means that there must be transparency and accountability. So the lack of those two things, the lack of transparency and the lack of accountability, especially for, you know, myself as a business owner as well, and feeling the effects of it, makes it very hard to just sit there and be like, okay, I'm just going to do...
comply.
Yeah,
without any information.
Of course,
doing
yeah,
certain things.
Of course, and you know the key retort of officials is like, well, you can, you know, make a Facebook group and have a protest online, or you can discuss your grievances online. Now, that might sound like very appealing in our modern world, but typically our world is, you know, not fashioned in that way.
It's this.
this conversations all around the world where people have issues. They will either go to the street, they will do some sort of protest, some sort of demonstration. This is not unique to Australia. It doesn't matter what kind of country you live in. Typically, you will end up with unrest of some sort if there is a push by the government to make people do a certain type of thing, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, I was not a protester per se. That is not the purpose of what I was doing. I actually didn't agree with everything. That was, you know, despite what people might say, I didn't agree with everything to do with protests and people's views and all this kind of stuff. But you know, as someone who is looking at this stuff from the outside, that is not that is not necessarily my role to do that, right? So I was being more so of an observer. In many ways, what I do at a wedding, you know, I'm not involved.
So you had that itch.
Yeah,
I was there, and the weddings were gone, and you're like, I need to do something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And of course, you were doing it for the purpose of
of course, yeah, for that purpose. So I think, you know, it's at a wedding, you know, I'm not a partner to the marriage. I'm there to observe, to capture, to tell what is happening.
Yeah.
And in this instance as well, you know, if I could observe a protest, or for instance, because that's the topic, on television, on the news, as someone who is discerning the narrative that I'm being fed by the TV, doesn't really gel up with the reality of what people are facing on the ground.
Or what people understand, or what they're trying to push their opinions.
Whether it's myself, whether it's my family, whether it's my friends, it doesn't gel with the conversations that people are having, because sometimes what you're hearing on the streets is actually what the everyday person is talking about. So the portrayal of people really pushed me out to actually go, you know, see if that's that is actually the truth, one, and then to actually see if, you know, as these people are portrayed on the TV, like crazy conspiracy theorists, are they, you know? But, you know, when I went there and actually filmed those things, actually it was not necessarily what the
regular
media...
regular concerns.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Then, look, there's a mix of all types of people.
Of course,
there's a bit of everything. But the one-sided portrayal of an event is very dangerous, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the media, the fact that they would just do that one...
Latch onto that
one side. That the fact that they would promote, almost act as an instrument of the state in terms of their portrayal of government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, media, I don't expect the media to be friends with the government and promoting their issues. No,
they're
meant to be critical of viewpoints and so on, right? But, and, you know, they took this stance that they are somehow a part of the government to direct people what to do.
Yes.
And traditionally, that's not the role of media in a Western democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, it may be in, like, you know, North Korea or China or something, the media is involved in this type of thing. Even in Sri Lanka, we have very major issues with state media, like just how much the government has their hands in the media.
And that's obviously with money as well. And
incentives, all sorts of stuff. So seeing that here, it was like very concerning, because, you know, what, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, lockdown, whatever, all right. But once you go from 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and then you're destroying people's businesses, you're destroying their lives, you people can't attend their family members' funerals, they can't do all this stuff. Hey, this is a different ballgame now. All of a sudden, the government, the media, all these people are actually impacting people's personal lives, right? If your father dies and you can't go then see your father at their funeral because the media and the government are telling you actually this is the case and all this kind of stuff, all right, we'll do that, but then provide the accountability and the transparency. So the moment that breaks down, I think, you know, people who can, or people that should be doing these kind of things, have to then step up to the plate, and that's traditionally been the role of the fourth estate, which is the media. And, you know, for myself, I saw myself as someone that could go there, put my camera, hit record, live stream, whatever it is what I'm doing, and then people can make up their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that is why a lot of people tuned into it, to what I was doing during that particular time, because they could watch it for themselves, and they could discern for themselves what was right, what was wrong, and how that connected with them. And, you know, that is, of course, in many ways, a very simple thing, because it's not highly produced or anything, just a view of what's happening in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that is actually the most powerful thing, just to give people a voice in those situations.
Mm.
And, you know, as the West, we pride ourselves in giving people in other disenfranchised countries around the world that voice through our platforms, and through giving them access to technology to actually share their grievances about their government. But in Australia, in the West, and in the countries at that time, our own governments were telling us we don't need to hear from our own people on the street because
we
know what's best.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, and that's always going to be a problem, and that's something that I'll always have a problem with, because that is not the foundational cornerstones of these countries. And as much as they like to make you believe that somehow it has become like that, that we're so advanced that we have technology that we no longer have to protest on the street.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
That is ridiculous. And I just want to preface all this with the fact that I understand that it's a health emergency, and there's, you know, people are talking about, you know, very serious thing, and there could be consequences to people mingling, and all. I get all of those things. But without having the you know, the proper accountability and transparency once again, and consistent science, right? Of course, there's a time period where things are in the unknown, right?
Of course.
Even myself, there's a time where things are not known. You're seeing stuff and things are happening for the first time. You're not sure.
Of course.
But when things start repeating, mistakes start being repeated, and all these things start happening the same way over and over.
And the cycle continues.
The cycle continues, and nothing changes from the people who are, you know, in fact controlling your life in many ways during that time. You're being asked to do a lot of things, a lot of sacrifices. But those people aren't making the same type of sacrifices sometimes. And there's, you see hypocrisy. You see how they treat different classes of people differently. When you see these things, then it's like there's something not right. And I think a lot of what I was doing was about that sense of showing people, you know, this is a matter of how it is. And whether you think it's right or wrong, you decide for yourself.
And everyone must be thinking, what kind of shoes were you wearing during that period?
Just whatever I had. Yeah. A lot of them were just work shoes.
I remember there was one I even tuned into, because
I
tuned into it a fair few times.
Yeah.
But I remember the one and you know what? No one ever speaks about this.
Yeah.
The people took over Westgate Bridge.
Yeah.
And that day it seemed like it was a day that went on forever.
Yeah.
How long were you on your feet for?
I think probably like 8 to 10 hours.
Jeez, you're a seasoned wedding photographer.
It's like a wedding, yeah. I don't think people get it, because weddings, you go just walking, you're on your feet, you're standing up, you're running around. It's like the same kind of thing. So you kind of zone out a little bit. You feel the pain and stuff, but it comes after. You know, you feel all that on your feet afterwards. So, but actually, in the moment, you're more focused on the actual work, so you don't feel it.
So now that So the aftermath after all of this is you obviously, I can hear the passion. You know, I can hear what you're passionate about. What are you doing with that energy and that momentum since then, and documenting, you know, what had happened over those 2 years? Obviously you did, as humble as you can be, you did explode over that period. There was a huge, you reached out to a lot of people and impacted a lot of people. I'm assuming a lot of love and a lot of maybe a lot of hate.
Yes.
How did you actually navigate that?
Yeah.
Those two, you know, the people that did comply, which probably did hate on you.
Yeah.
And the people that, you know, you in their eyes fought for them.
Yes.
How did you navigate all of that?
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's always two extremes. I think as a realist, you kind of understand that, you know, people aren't going to, you can't expect everyone to love you or agree with you or whatever, you know, in any instance, right? That's not the reality of the world. I like certain, you know, politicians, I dislike certain politicians. So we all have our biases towards certain views, and that's always, you know, because of either ideological reasons or upbringing or whatever it is. Like, there's certain views that we have about certain things. So there's always that. And of course, during a time like that, the lens in which you are portrayed for the advantage of other people as well becomes an issue. So people will portray me in a certain way and take what I'm saying or doing out of context as well. So, and there's not much you can, it's all out of your control. And I think I learned that very early on, that there's no point trying to defend myself. People were saying all sorts of things about me that didn't like me for whatever reason. But like, yeah, and there's no point trying to defend yourself. You're kind of almost like digging further into what they want you to do.
Exactly.
Right? So you're kind of getting caught up in this stuff. So that necessarily doesn't become as important. And it's never really been that important to me anyway. And it became even less important during that time. I fully stopped caring about what people thought of me. Now, of course, with that, there's been a lot of, you know, there was professional consequences in terms of my wedding business and personal relationships and all this kind of stuff. Like, that is just naturally what happens in a heated moment like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the whole community was having these conflicts with people that they love and friends and stuff because they were disagreeing on certain points, you know? There was this kind of, the fabric of our society was being torn apart because we were fighting over the concept of, like, vaccine mandates and whether it's right or whether it's wrong. You know, things like this that typically people wouldn't argue about.
No,
right?
No, exactly.
It's dinner table politics maybe, but not about these kind of things, right? So, you know, figuring out how to navigate that and just understanding that this is just, like, the reality of the world, I think it's made me a lot more resilient in terms of, you know, how I see myself progressing in the future. It's been a wonderful thing, actually, a lot of the trolling and the hate, because you learn that resilience. And I think that's very important in today's world to actually, you know, to understand what that is and then deal with that in a way which is, which doesn't cower you, you know what I mean? Where you don't become a victim.
Victim mentality or that.
Yeah, just kind of dispelling all that from yourself, I think is very, very important. But, you know, I find that today, that experience during that time, I didn't go looking for people to follow me, and all, I was just doing it, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't understand the gravity, maybe, that I was, you know, on the Westgate Bridge live streaming and there was like 70,000 people, whatever. I didn't understand the metrics of that. I might have thought that was quite normal, maybe, when people are watching these type of things. I was more so just doing it. You know what I mean? So
you're the passenger part of it.
Yeah, right? And then it's later on, you kind of figure out when you speak to people that, oh, hey, this, you know, we're watching this. I've met a lot of people during my time after this where they'll tell me, hey, Rukshan really had an impact on me during that time because it was gave me a different perspective, or it just helped me connect with people saying that I'm not the only person thinking this way.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that I kind of found out later. Not really during the time. I had no idea. I was just like doing what I was doing. You just
I think people were scared.
Caught in the moment.
Yeah, and I think people. What you're saying, I think people were actually. There were people who were scared to voice their opinions because people would judge them or they'd lose business over that. You know, and I think that runs deep. So I think the voicing has become much more natural and being resilient to your opposition voice, you know?
Yeah.
And having an argument and having a discussion over things.
Of course. Like, people are terrified to talk, like, not just about this issue, but any kind of view that they might have. You know, our world has changed. Like, our parents' generation, maybe going back 20, 30 years, they would more freely discuss things, right or wrong. It wouldn't usually impact their business, right? But the change of pace today, you know, like, right after, like, a lot of the protests and stuff, people were going on my wedding business page on Google and just leaving negative reviews about my business.
Yeah, right.
People I'd never, like, done work for, nothing. Just because out of spite, right?
But isn't that bizarre about how people will go out and do that for someone that was... All they know is that he was out there just documenting something that was really going on.
Yes, but the documentation... For some people, I found... interesting, the documentation of an event which contradicts their own view and that is not being sanctioned by the government and the media, who are saying that such documentation is dangerous, is a problem to them. Like, they see that as a real problem. They don't want to know that side. They don't want to know because they already have their mind made up about people.
So they love the smoke and mirrors, basically.
Yeah, they love the smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's what they feel comfortable with.
100%. And I'm not saying that, you know, people can't have particular views on issues, but, you know, that whole period in my life doing the coverage of the protests actually gave me a lot of perspective on, you know, my past life in terms of my perspectives or biases I've had towards people or certain groups of people and things like this. So, for instance, I'm going off the track here, but in Sri Lanka, the civil war.
Yes.
25.
Can't tell us, and fill us in, because a lot of people.
Yes.
So many people don't understand Sri Lanka's turbulent history, and even till now, you know, with the Tamils and.
Of course. So major history in Sri Lanka, obviously, you know, colonial history there, and as the British left and the country kind of became one country, you know, there was ethnic separation in the sense of how constitutions or how laws were managed and how people were treated. Like, you know, it's very obvious looking at history, like there were differences in the way that people did things. Now, that's not unique to Sri Lanka, because if you go back to, you know, the USA, the home of freedom and democracy, it wasn't until, you know, late 60s or whatever, where they had, you know, Martin Luther King, all these kind of people fighting for civil rights.
Yes, of course.
So this is not a thing that's unique to Asian countries. But, you know, of course we have this ethnic turmoil, we have differences amongst people, and with the effects of colonialism and that kind of void being filled in now by the locals of that island of Sri Lanka, there's issues. And that, of course, led to a long drawn out civil conflict between the different ethnic minorities in Sri Lanka. The majority of people, the Sinhalese and the Tamil minority. And, you know, what I realized during the protest here was that, you know, devoid of the access to information that we have today about what's happening in our world, what's happening in one's guests, you know, like there's no set path for this stuff, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I never expected to be doing what I'm doing today. 2-3 years ago. So of course there's twists and turns.
Of course.
But I have more of a intimate knowledge and understanding of what's happening in that space in this country. And I feel like, yeah, I would like to participate in that, and that's kind of what I believe I'm doing. Yeah. Whether I'm effective or not, I don't know. But at least I believe that I'm participating in this in some form or not other.
I'm sure you are, man. I'm sure you are. And yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, you're reaching out to people that would, you know, theme for your voice and what you're talking about. I need a piss.
Yeah, go, man. There's a bathroom there.
So I'm happy to roll, wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're out of now. Thank you.
Yeah. That was easy, man. Thanks,
Thank
bro.
You.